You are listening to the Beyond the High Road podcast with Shelby Milford, episode number 56. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Beyond the High Road.
You guys, first off, I just want to say I'm so sorry for, if you see me right now, you'll see, for the such a late release of the podcast episode. I literally was just burying my sweet Nita. So I know that's probably TMI, but I feel like I can be real with you guys. And I also feel like I really try my hardest to get you guys the episode like as soon as physically, humanly possible every week. And I work really hard at doing it. And I just want you to know that I, when I'm late, there's a reason. And in this case, Nita did not make it. So in the episode, you'll hear me talking about how she just gotten sick, but, she is, as of today, she's not here anymore. And anyway, I don't want to depress you anymore. I was so close to stopping what I was doing and stopping burying her to try to release the episode. But I felt like I owed you guys at least something, just a little explanation, because it's very late now. So anyway, okay. All right. There is an Ask Me Anything Saturday. I will be around. I will be okay. In fact, I will probably need the distraction. So Ask Me Anything is still Saturday at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. Okay. Either join the Facebook group or follow the link that I put in the show notes. Okay. I've got dirt all over my face. A mess. I mean, I literally just came in from outside. Okay. All right. Enjoy the episode. Sorry if I just totally bummed you out. It is what it is. She's sweet. It's okay. Okay.
Hey, you guys, if you're watching this, then you see my background. I'd already done the episode cover art and had this handy. And my darling pig, Carnita, I woke up this morning was, no, kitty, I've got all of the animals coming to me right now because I'm here, I'm accessible. I'm literally on the floor in the corner of a room. So I woke up this morning and business as usual, you know, did my morning routine and I came in to get my pig who's normally up and making noise and ready to eat. And this morning she wasn't. At first I thought it was just her being lazy. And then I realized that she is labored breathing and is laying in her back legs. So yeah, there's that. I was on the phone all morning with the vet. I'm just, I think, in a place. It's been a rough go of it today. It looks like I'm petting the air right now. She's there. It's Nita. But yeah, so here I am recording from my pig's bed in the corner of a room, hence the virtual background, because it's not so pretty right here. And yeah, it's my sweet kiddo when she was a year old. Her year birthday, I thought, outfitting to put that up there. For the podcast year anniversary. Everything I do is for my babe. Everything. That's all for her. It just seems like a fitting episode art for the situation. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to quick change that. Maybe just take her out of it. So it's just the happy birthday. That way it doesn't look like I've got pimples looking at the thing right now. Looks a little strange. So I'm just going to be right back at you. Well, wasn't she cute? She still is, darling. But also, hopefully you guys can hear me because I'm not talking as loud as I normally would. I've got a different camera set up out here or over here. So it's just, I'm a little off kilter today. When it rains, it pours. I will be dead honest with you. Before we get started, like this episode originally, I don't often write full on outlines anymore. It's been a while since I really did that. And I wrote one for this episode because I had a story I wanted to tell and I wanted it to not be very long. And the general mood of it was going to be a bit celebratory. And this week has started off as a doozy of a week. You know, sometimes it's just it is what it is. Today is Tuesday. On Sunday, I had a really tough day with regard to emotions about my babe. I can't remember exactly what kicked it off, what initially started the mood, but I was just sad, you know? And I allowed for the sadness and I didn't fight it. I didn't love it to be there, but I also didn't want it to go away. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be sad about what's going on. I want to miss her and I'm gonna cry, you know, thinking about it. I wouldn't ever not want to miss her. You know, I don't think at this point anyway. And so it's appropriate. It's appropriate discomfort, appropriate amount of sadness, I guess, that I'm feeling. Sometimes it just comes in like bigger waves than others. And that's what happened this week. And so it started on Sunday and actually through all day yesterday. And it's been a while since it's been that long of a wave. I think it probably added to my emotion when yesterday my plan was all along to look for Drew her first birthday pictures and find one for the episode art and looking through old photos, you know, that always sort of does it to all of us. So along with missing my babe, I haven't spoken to her. Last month, she wrote the night before the first Zoom visit in October, asking to have the entire month off. She wrote it to the supervisor. So anyway, so I haven't seen her either. So basically my message here is I go through the same hardships that I think that you guys do. Life throws punches all the time. And it's what you do with it. You know, I think it's really important to remember that. Well, let me just start by saying, so this week's topic is the top 10 things that I've learned since beginning my healing. There was 10, and I guess I'll just add an 11th, and that one is that you roll with the punches. Things do happen. Life happens, and it doesn't stop. I wish I could say that life, all of a sudden, you'll get, you know, this is what we always think about, you know, when we're in the darkest places. We look at other people, and we think, look at their life. It looks so easy. Oh, they've got it made. Oh, at least they have blah, blah, blah. When I get there, then things will be easy. And I just want to offer to you that it's not true. You know, that life is always going to hand you good and bad. And it's what you want to see. Sometimes there's no way but to see the challenges. And I know that you know that part very well. So depending on where you are in your healing, maybe you've already begun to see and feel the joyous moments following alienation, and maybe you haven't. Just know that if you are at the lowest point thus far, that it does get better, but it gets better because of the perspective that you choose. That is everything. Because it can always get worse. It just depends on how you're thinking in your mind. There has been no shift in my custody situation. Partly, I take responsibility because I have not actively pursued, you know, going back to court and do all those things. But there's been no change in the custody situation and life has gotten better. So I used to always think that the only way things can get better and the only way that I'll find happiness is if my daughter comes back home. And I just want to offer that it doesn't have to be that way. Not to say that I wouldn't be and you wouldn't be elated if your children came home to you. And for me too, I would forget many things. In fact, I would drop everything to have my daughter home with me. But that isn't the only way for you to find joy. Believe it or not, there's a balance that you can create for yourself that enables you to find serendipity, find joy, meaning, purpose. So let's get into the planned content for today. Sometimes, I don't know, it's like I quickly forget little things. I looked down at my outline and there it was in black and white. Earlier, I'd said I don't even know what started the whole going down memory lane. And I have it written down right here. It's the first paragraph in the outline for the Healing and Reinvention Program. I'm adding a feature, and that feature is a private podcast. While I was uploading the first episode this weekend, I was trying to locate the audio file on my desktop, and it ended up being in a folder with about 10 other audio files. And these audio files were, I didn't know it at the time when I was opening them the other day, but they happened to be all from a chunk of time back in 2015 when my daughter had just left and gone to her father's. Back in 2015, I was with that, we'll call him Byron, not my daughter's father, but the other guy, you know, that one that I never have a nickname for. He shall be named Byron. That was still unfortunately going strong. In fact, earlier that year, the very end of January, I married Byron and we did it down in the Florida Keys. And then from there, left family and friends and went into the Caribbean and did our honeymoon. And upon return, I got my kiddo from school, had her for that night. And then the next morning, I dropped her off to school and would have her for the rest of the week. When I dropped her off to school after being gone for roughly 3 weeks, I was checking my voicemail messages on the way home. And one of the messages I'd received was from a few days before from the local children's hospital. And it was a nurse requesting that I bring my daughter in for some pre-procedure blood work. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because I had scheduled no procedure for her. And so when I called her back and found out that my daughter was scheduled for an elective surgery that I did not know anything about while I was gone. So when my daughter was born, I had an emergency C-section. And so if you guys know, if you've been in the room for dads, or if you, as a mom, if you had a C-section or no, you know, until they bring the baby around to you, you can't see your baby being delivered because there's that sheet right there to cover you, right? And so my daughter was immediately taken. She had like a cough, right? Immediately taken to the NICU for just a very short period of time, just to make sure she was okay. And so she was. And so I didn't see her for the first hour. And it was like the most painful, long stretch of time. They bring her to me. She's this beautiful baby with a head of hair. And she was just perfect, right? One of the first things, there was two things that her father said to me right at her birth. One of them was, let's give her your middle name, which I thought was very sweet. It was endearing. And of course, we did that. And the other thing that he said was, we can get that removed. And he was pointing to a beautiful birthmark on her knee. And it, as an infant, it was large. That time, I don't know, when she was around 8, it was around 2 inches long. And it was almost flat to the surface of her skin. I had a very good friend while I lived in Austin. I mean, he's still a dear friend of mine who was a dermatologist. And in fact, we would go out to lunch at least once a month. And each time we went, he would always give her and I really body checks, right? And make sure we were good. So he was always checking her knee to make sure that it wasn't anything to worry about, right? And it wasn't. Long story short is that this is what the procedure was for, I found out. And I was livid, of course, but at the same time, I had been through previous situations where I would act to protect her, my daughter, and things got very volatile, let's say, right? And so I dreaded having to squawk, you know, rock any boat. I really tried to keep everything as status quo, just trucking along without causing any major waves. So I was really annoyed that this came up because for obvious reasons. I got off the phone with the nurse. At first, I was totally annoyed. And then I was like, you know, let me call them back. I wanted to make sure. I was willing to not put up a fight and just let them do it if the conditions, this procedure was right? If it was not in any way going to be risky, if there were things that I didn't know that he had found out, you know, I was open. And to make a very long story short and not go into all the details, I spoke with the nurse. It was going to be an hour under general anesthesia, not local. And she was going to be out of activities and in a full leg brace, the whole nine, for 5 weeks or so. And so I was like, this is crazy. Just so happened that my then across the street neighbor was a physician's assistant. And in fact, she did a lot of surgeries. And her daughter was roughly the same age as my daughter is. Her daughter was a grade younger than mine, just because her birthday was in November, I believe. And so anyway, I went over there and I was like, hey, would you opt to get Mazzy surgery to get a birthmark removed and being under general anesthesia for an hour? And she was like, no, absolutely not. She, of course, then asked what I was talking about. And I explained, just so happened that the surgery center that my daughter was being taken to happened to be her, my across the street neighbor's partner, happened to be the lead surgeon, right? He led that team. And so it was perfect. In fact, I knew the guy just from my neighbor. So I got my daughter in for a second, third, whatever opinion. And of course, he confirmed my thoughts about this, my suspicions, I guess you will, that it was not a necessary procedure, that it was entirely cosmetic, elective, and that if it were, I asked him if he would do it, if it were him, he would not opt to do the surgery. So I was really upset because I felt like it put me into a pickle of a place. I didn't want to have to stop anything. I didn't want to have to advocate for my daughter in this way, right? Because I knew what it was going to cause. I knew what the aftermath might look like. I felt it. I knew, because any time in the past that I'd gone to protect her, the payback was hell, right? And so I was terrified. But I didn't make my decision. I kept trying to keep my mind open all the way up until the pretty much moments before surgery happened. Her dad never notified me of this secret surgery he had planned, right? This was all planned behind my back. And so then finally, when I let him know that I knew, he assured me that he'd gone through. We had standard custody order where if the parents don't agree, then there's a tiebreaker, and that tiebreaker is usually the pediatrician or the specialist. And so he had told me, assured me that he had gotten the pediatrician's referral. So I ended up getting the information back from the doctor. I'd been waiting across the street at the Starbucks. My hands were shaking. I was so nervous. I did not want to have to stop the surgery, but the doctor came back and said, no, a referral was never given. This was done on their own. They hadn't followed the protocol, basically. So I went in and stopped the surgery. So of course, as you probably can imagine, all hell broke loose in the surgery center, and her father threatened me, and he was, it wasn't a pretty scene.
I knew what was to come by doing it. I did. I knew that I was going to face the wrath. This had happened one other time, not with a medical thing, something completely unrelated. And although I won in court, the price I paid out of court socially with what he did to follow, what they did to follow, basically any time I acted to protect her, I got punished. And I knew it. I knew what I was going into. And that's why I was so nervous. When I got punished, I got scared. When I get scared, I buckle under pressure. Or that's what I believed about myself back then. And that's what I sort of made happen, right? I stuck my head in the sand. And so although I was able to hold it together and advocate for my daughter in the short term, I wasn't able to advocate for myself for the long haul. So I did everything I needed to do both times, this surgery time and the other time beforehand. I did everything I needed to do to protect my daughter and make sure she was safe. And then I crumbled. It was like I was using willpower and like that protective mom part of me for her and to make sure she was safe. And then when it came to advocating for my own self, I didn't know how to do it. And that is really just like a theme of mine throughout my life that I am still to this day working on. I didn't know this back then. I didn't know what was happening with me. So of course I was repeating that same pattern. So I got served. I knew it was coming and I was fine at first until the pressure started coming on from them. I was being followed. I was being badgered and bullied and harassed, basically. The more pressure I felt, the more I wanted to retreat into my shell and pretend it wasn't happening. I tell you this story to illustrate where I was back then, how I was too afraid to look at my own faults. I was too afraid to face and acknowledge the alienation, because I was terrified of being shamed. I was refusing. I remember being very stubborn in that I refused to let them do the shaming. Having been a part of many hearings in years prior, I refused to see her smug face sitting across from me in the hearings and watch the production that was put on in the courtroom by them, by the stepmom. I couldn't take it. I wouldn't at the time. I felt like her holier than thou, yet very, it was just an awful display of, I'll be nice here and just say dramatics, was repulsive to me. And I couldn't take watching her try to make me out to be the bad parent, the one who was repulsive. And I don't say this to be judgy. I say this to share with you where my head was at, where my focus was at back then. This was what kept me from advocating for myself. Basically, I was cutting off my nose to spite my face because I was focusing on them and what they were thinking about me and what they were wanting to do to me in my mind. Like I was saying just a few minutes ago, I lost sight of my true goal, which was always to parent my child. I told myself I couldn't face the alienation without numbing myself, without having a reward at the end of the day for dealing with all of it. For everything I had been through, I needed something as like a little helper to decompress after putting up with so much. I also told myself that, look, other parents, other moms drink just as much as I do, right? They have the bottle of wine at night too, and they're still actively momming. Why should I be any different? Why is it that I'm the one that gets punished? My drinking has nothing to do with my ability to parent my child. Although these things are technically true, looking back on that now, I know that the amount of energy I expended in protecting my habit was not healthy. It's fine and dandy if there are no repercussions, but it just so happened that there were repercussions for me. And yes, it was a different situation, and other moms, other dads, other parents that were split could do the things that I was doing and still actively parent their child. But those parents were not dealing with the same thing I was dealing with. And so to me, though, at the time, it didn't make sense. Why should I be punished for their efforts, their pathology, basically? And I was looking at it wrong. So back to the original thing that I was talking about, what prompted all this, I told myself at the time that no other guy would put up with this kind of baggage, all of the harassment and the bullying and the crap that because of this custody situation, this custody nightmare that I was going through, that I was never going to be able to find anybody better than who I was currently with. I just remember always thinking, like, who would volunteer or sign on to be a part of this hell? Because I was living, it was like my own personal hell. And I know that you guys know that really well too. So instead, I remained with the abusive guy that would soon be the demise of my relationship with my daughter. Looking back on that, I realized that I allowed the custody situation to define me, to define who I was, aside from being a mom. I allowed it to have an effect on my own perceived worth. Today, I look back on that version of me, and I feel so sad, right? I pity that version of me, that girl back then. I was listening to my voice, the sound of my voice, and the words that were coming out of my mouth and that weren't coming out of my mouth, and listening to what Byron was saying, just felt like this deep sadness and longing for that girl, that version of me, for what she needed. I felt it brought me right back there. And I feel like that girl is so familiar, yet so very foreign to me. So I want to share with you the things that I've learned since then. I was going to do like the things I've learned in the last year since the podcast started, but I really think it might be more helpful for y'all, depending on where you're at and you're in this whole process, right? Coming back to your self-healing, advocating for your own selves. I thought it would be more helpful to basically give you the top 10 things I've learned since then, the darkest place, the girl that was on those audio recordings that I was listening to this weekend. I have these written down. So number one is, I am worth more than rubies, and so are you. And so this actually, that first part of that sentence, I'm worth more than rubies, is actually comes from a verse in the Bible. But it does not matter whether you are Christian or not. It's still, this message applies. Just take it for face value. You are worth so much more than I would bet that you give yourself credit for or that you recognize. I think all of us, doesn't matter how high or amazing your self-esteem and self-view is, I just truly believe that none of us give ourselves enough recognition. And so I try to tell myself every day now that very thing. I am capable of so much more than I can ever even imagine. That, you know, you and me both, we are, you hear me say it if you listen to this podcast before, is that we're superheroes. You're a superhero. I'm a superhero. We can do things. We don't, there's so much untapped potential in these brains of ours. You know, we don't use near the potential and the capability that we have. So don't sell yourself short is basically my lesson one. About a year and a half after my daughter left, I sold the home that I built for her and I, and I moved out to the country, not the house on the hill, but one before that, and had a bunch more land. It was great for my pig, and it was closer to her. It was right around the corner from her, and I wanted to be on her bus route. But that Christmas, the second Christmas she was gone, was into woodworking at the time and really feeling my artistry, painting and stuff. And I made her this big chest, you know, like a one to go at the edge of her bed, out of maple wood. And so it was this big, heavy maple wood chest. And I painted on each one of its sides and on the top of it. And one of the things that I painted was this, the scripture basically saying that you are worth more than rubies. As I was doing the artwork for this, I was shaming myself and sort of reprimanding myself for not knowing better, for not leaving Byron earlier, for not knowing how to advocate for myself, following me standing up for her and stopping the surgery. By the way, to this day, I do stand by my decision to stop the surgery. I won't share it now, but maybe at a different time, I'll share what happened after that surgery and how it didn't work to my advantage, but well, for many reasons. But no matter what, if I was to do it all over again, I would still stop the surgery because I truly didn't believe in why it was being done. Not only why it was being done, how it was being done, that she was going to be under, and I didn't believe in putting her through the risk if given the choice to do something over. That wouldn't be it. I just don't believe that was the right thing for her to have that surgery. But I would take back and do over what I did with myself and my lack of advocating for myself afterwards, and therefore her advocating for her in the long haul. That I would change. So you are worth way more. And also how you treat yourself, what you allow yourself to have in life, what you expect from yourself. You deserve so much more than you're giving yourself is basically the message there. Okay. So number two is, sometimes I suck. And that's okay, right? It's perfectly fine. I think we all suck at times. We all do. We're human. We're fallible. It's when we're able to embrace the suck that we're able to use the suck to our benefit. Embracing it, not with self-deprecation, but embracing it with humility and dignity, that's when you can start harnessing it, right? And embracing it also allows it, like kind of takes the air out of it. So if there are things that you don't like about yourself, for me, I find a lot of relief when I reveal those things to other people, when I don't keep them hidden and shame myself for the things that I don't like. Instead, I use them to sort of empower and just lay it all out on the line for anybody, really. Instead of trying to hide it and trying to make myself somebody that I'm not, that always causes me to act really weird. And I can't say creepy, but kind of like just weird and awkward. And so I prefer just to lay it all down the line. You know, this is who I am. And I do suck sometimes.
You guys, I think it was the Do You Appreciate You episode. I think that's the one where I talked about some of the things that I don't love about myself, but like that I'm impatient and I'm stubborn and I'm a lot to handle a lot of the time. The very people say that I've got a big personality. And there are so many times I can tell you, I mean, I can think back so many times where I wished I could shrink myself, like my personality, so that I wasn't so stand out. Trust me, especially during the whole mess with my ex, I really wished that I could be a little more quiet, but it's just not who I am. Not when I am at my happiest and at my truest self, it's who I am. So I've learned to, for the most part, embrace it. And so those things that you cringe about yourself, instead of cringing, instead of like, oh, I hate that about myself, I challenge you to take a different perspective and find reasons why you love those things about yourself. Because I guarantee you, no matter what, those things that you don't like can turn out to be your greatest assets in the right applications. Okay. So yeah, the third thing I've learned is talking about the issue causes you to have authority over it. And I know that you guys probably have heard this before or know it for yourself, but throughout the last year, I know just how true this is. It used to be that sitting down to just even write out about like doing a thought download or trying to write about what had happened over the course of the years, right, with my daughter's father and even Byron afterwards, when I would sit down and try to write about it just with myself, I would enter into a trauma response. After trauma response, after trauma response, it was just so activating to even think about. But over this last year, especially for me, I've learned that talking about it, talking about what has happened has caused me to have authority over it, but also has caused me to settle into it and sort of get some distance from it, right? Because I've created a purpose for it. And so what my hope is that each one of you, no matter how you do it, all in your own ways, find a way to express yourself about what has gone on. You can actually gain a lot of authority over it by doing this. Talking it out is everything. And then number four is just because you think it doesn't make it true. Question everything. So maybe you've heard me say this before, but I used to believe that if it occurred in my mind, it was true. It had to be true because my brain thought it. And like this especially applies to like if I had a craving, if the craving happened, if I had this like an urge to have a drink, then I was done for, right? If you've listened to the Habits episode, I'm sure one of those habits, any of the Habits episodes, you heard me say this, right? And I did. I really truly thought if it occurred to me, I had to believe it. It was true. I had to follow through with whatever it was. Nobody had ever taught me any different. And so one of the biggest lessons I've learned over the last, I don't know, 6, 7 so years is that that's not true. Just because it occurs to you doesn't make it true. It just means it occurred to you. Sometimes it's just a fleeting thought and I can just let it float on by. I don't have to act on it, right? And so number five is just because it's true doesn't mean you have to think it. You hear me say this all the time. If it doesn't serve you, if it's not working for you, then don't continue to think it. It's as simple as that. Something can be true. It can be proved in a court of law. But if it's not working for you in your life and it has no benefit to thinking it, then don't. Don't do it. Don't torture yourself. There is no need to create an environment inside your own body, inside your own head where you live, of uneasiness or whatever it is that the thought is, if it's not working for you, okay? Find a thought that moves you to where you want to go, okay? It's not that you're ignoring the truth, but you can find a version of that truth that pushes you into the direction that you want to go. Number six, defining who you are means that you must also define who you are not. This one can bring up some fear because when we have to define what we don't want in our lives, this can cause us to feel very vulnerable. It depends on who we're speaking about here, but it can cause us like in a romantic relationship and in some, even in friendships, it can cause you to feel very vulnerable And then when it comes to like your children, it can cause you to feel uneasy. Like if you stand up for what you don't want in your life, that you might end up cutting them out inadvertently. And so it can feel very scary to even ask yourself what it is that you don't want to put up with. Because if you're not willing to put up with certain things, like the way that our brains work, those things are already there in your mind, things that you don't like, things that you act, you respond not so well to. Let's just say we're talking about boundaries. Those unacceptable things, acts done by somebody else, you already don't respond well to them. And you probably already do sort of retract or respond to them in a way that you don't want. But when you're stating it beforehand, this is what I will not accept, that means that you're taking the first step to possibly opening up the door for them to walk the other direction. And that's scary. Stating and being clear about your boundaries means that you inevitably are going to inadvertently repel some people. So defining who you are also means that you must define who you're not. Number 7, being different doesn't make you less relevant. It makes you more relatable. So the 6 and 7 sort of go together. So in 1, you are stating what you will not put up with, right? You're putting up a boundary. But when you actually effectively put up these boundaries for yourself, what you will accept in your life and what you will do if somebody crosses that boundary. Listen to the boundaries episode. The people that accept and respect those boundaries and that are, you know, have no problem with that, you have now sort of accepted them into your life and you've created the space where love can grow. Those people are your ride or die people. They feel privileged and happy and want to celebrate you for having boundaries, standards, basically. Those standards work for those people. So 7 is being different doesn't make you less relevant. It makes you more relatable. 8, putting yourself out there for what you believe is worth the risk. Just like I was saying, listen, even in the case of my daughter, I don't know if I'd ever be able to sit with myself if I hadn't stopped that surgery that day. No matter what the repercussions were. And the repercussions were, here I sit, right, without her today. I don't know that I would ever have been able to stop their efforts to alienate, but the direct result of me stopping that surgery was this lawsuit. But I, to this day, I would regret not stopping that surgery, not advocating for my daughter. Putting myself out there to stand up for what I believe in means everything to me. Even when I was trembling in the moment for taking those steps and doing it. Like I was saying, my regret lies in what I did or didn't do after. I didn't advocate for myself effectively and therefore inadvertently didn't advocate for her in the long run. And that's where my regret lands. But I truly believed and acted on what I believed in by stopping that surgery. So I think putting yourself out there for what you believe is always worth the risk. And it doesn't have to be as dramatic as the steps that I took. It can be in the everyday things. Just standing up for what it is that you believe in for yourself and for those who you've claimed as your own, right? Number 9, stress does not have to be a bad thing. If you've heard that recent stress is enhancing episode, this is what I'm talking about here. Stress is not what causes long-term health. It's what we believe about the stress that causes the long-term health problems, right? If I want to believe, like the other day, I was having a bunch of stress about the car situation. It's coming down to the wire and I haven't yet fully settled on a car. So I was stressed about that. I was not feeling so great about my daughter. I was missing my daughter. And then I have this thing with my pig going on today. So there's been a lot of stress going on in my world. Maybe it's not like the height of alienation kind of stress, but still feels like the hits keep coming this week, right? And so back in the day, I would have made that stress be like, dun, dun, dun. And today I am looking at each one of these little stresses as though these are things that I'm supposed to grow through. So they're like little challenges for me, little obstacles that I am already equipped to complete.
I just have to figure out how to do it. And so when I look at each one of these stressors as a challenge, as opposed to my demise, then life is so much better. The stress response. Yesterday, I was walking in circles in my house and I was telling myself, you're going to be okay. This is just a challenge. This is just an obstacle. You have to get through. And my whole day ended up so much better, right? I wasn't exhausted, you know, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was fine. Stress does not have to be a bad thing. Each one of the stressors that come to you are there to grow you. Okay. And then the last thing is helping others is where it's at for healing. Giving your time and attention and love, directing it into somebody that needs it is everything. Not only does it create a sense of release in your own system, but it opens your heart to so much more love. And it does, it distracts you a little bit, even during it. Causes you, and especially if you're helping other people with challenges that you've already been through, then your sense of purpose, feeling necessary, irreplaceable, a sense of your life having meaning always comes from doing service work, no matter what it is, right? So helping others is definitely where it's at. Helps normalize your pain, not in a way that you are allowing bad things to happen to you, but allowing it in your body so that you can move through it and grow from it, okay? So there you have it, you guys. I hope you guys are having a lovely week. I'm going to go and take care of my very sick pig who has still not moved 1 inch, well, maybe 1 inch since last night. So forgive me. I will talk with you guys next week. Okay, take care. Thanks so much for listening today, guys. I'm honored that you chose to share your time with me. If you like what you've been hearing and you want more, come join me in the new monthly membership, where we take the concepts that you hear about here and using a logical framework, you learn to apply them to your specific situations, upgrading your thoughts and your life, even while experiencing the grief of alienation. For more information, go to beyondthehighroad.com. See you soon.